better way to do this. Let me show you a better way.
Hi, folks. This is Shaq Spierko with another edition of the Survival Podcast. As always, one man's view of the changing world, the changing times, and the things that we can all do to live a better life. If times get tough, or even if they don't. Today is Monday, so it's Listener Feedback Day. It's also episode 1207, and it's September 16th, 2013. I'm going to apologize in advance for the quality of today's audio. If you can't tell, I have a hoarse throat once again. This happens to me once a year on average, and once in a while when I do a large event where I have to talk. This is actually a little bit of some kind of throat crud that came to my home via my son's girlfriend, who I've now dubbed for a while Typhoid Tiffany. Anyway, I've got it. Joe's got it. Fortunately, my wife doesn't have it. She has the immune system of like a horse on steroids from 20-plus years of working in the pediatrics field or the nursing field in general. But, yeah, we've both got it. So I apologize, but I'll do my best for you. And it's a lot better today than it was yesterday. And I've got some hot coffee here to keep things moist and ready to go. So we'll do the best we can for you, but I will apologize for any weakness in my voice today. Before I get into the show, which, of course, is all of your emails, comments, suggestions, and some announcements that come into jack@thesurvivalpodcast.com. The way to submit material for this, either a question, comment, email, whatever you want to do, put, you know, something for Jack in the subject line. So if you're sending me an article, put in article for Jack. A video, put in video for Jack. If you were sending in a picture for Jack, whatever. And then, you know, give me a little bit of information on why I should care, and I'll look at it and put it through my screening process. If you use the 4-Jack formula, I'm a lot more likely to see it. Before we get to your stuff, let's go ahead and take care of our sponsors. Sponsor of the day number one today, Ready-Made Resources. Ready-Made Resources does what it says and says what it does. All the resources you need for your prepping, ready-made, ready to go. Point, click, and buy on their website. Shipped to you with lightning-fast service, great pricing, and great selection. Everything for your prepping needs, from guns to gardens and everything in between, check them out at readymaderesources.com. Next up today, bulkammo.com. What are you going to find at Bulk Ammo? Ammo in bulk. It's also a company that does what it says and says what it does. We seem to have a lot of those around here, maybe because of our straightforward nature. Anyway, Bulk Ammo is the place to get all your ammo in bulk, large quantities, and their shipping is so fast it'll make your neck snap. You won't believe how fast your ammo will end up in your hands if you purchase it from bulkammo.com. And a lot of times when other people are out of everything, they'll still have the things that you're looking for. Remember, both Ready-Made Resources, Bulk Ammo, and many of our sponsors support our Member Support Brigade with a discount. Whenever you're ordering, go to the Member Support Brigade first, if you're a member, that is. More on that in a second. Click on the benefits page and look at the list of the discount vendors. And see if you're looking, who the people you're looking to do business with give you a discount. You might as well get it if you paid for it. Which leads me right into the Member Support Brigade. That's the way you can help support this show. $50 a year or $5 a month, your choice. And you become a member. It comes out to 18.3 cents per episode. So when you're done with the show, if you think, you know what, this show's worth two dimes a day, maybe you consider joining. If you do that because of discounts like the ones I've just mentioned, because of things like $200 worth of free ebooks, because of a lot of great benefits that are part of your private membership and your exclusive members area on the website, you will get your investment back many times over, but you'll also be supporting the show. That's how I build a product, so that both I and the customer win. That's how I always build something, and that's why I've had success in business, and it's a big part of why the business model of TSP has been successful. I say that because I'm going to bounce a business thing off you very, very briefly today when we get into the main topic of today's show. Next up, want to remind you guys about the relaunch of 13skills.com. I did get a bunch of badges in toward the end of the week, last week, for the contest. I'm going to take entries for another day or two. If you want to support 13skills.com and you are a graphics designer, make up some badges. Badges like a blogger might display on their blog. Not big giant banners that go all the way across screen. Small ones like you put in the column of a blog. Send those to me in GIF, JPEG, or PNG attachments to an email. You can enter one, you can enter four, whatever you want to do. And this week I'm going to run a poll, and we'll let that poll run for a couple weeks, and whoever wins will get a free lifetime Member Support Brigade membership valued at $300 on the rare occasions when we actually put some up for sale. Okay, that pretty much wraps up. Oh, yeah, military, law enforcement, Peace Corps, active duty and prior service. firefighters, EMTs, and other first responders like paramedics and I'm sorry, I'm discombobulated. If you're a first responder, you know what you are. You guys qualify for a discount for the MSB. Just put service discount in the subject line. Email me, and in two sentences or less, who you are and what you're doing, or who you are and what you did of your prior service, and I'll give you a discount code. Do that before, not after you join the Member Support Brigade. All right. So with that wrapped up, I do have something I'm teasing today, and I want to tease it with a couple qualifiers. Number one, it's not super secret squirrel. It's not like I don't want people to know about it. Just early on, I don't want too many people to know about it, and I want to kind of confine it to this audience. And I don't want to take up the show with it. It's not PermaEthos related. It's going to be a program that's run a lot like I ran the program for Empty Knives for Patrick, but in this case, I'm not doing it for someone else. I have some partners involved. We're doing it for ourselves. I'm calling it Project 20. It's a code name. It's not what it really is, but it kind of sort of is. And I'm not going to even ask you to send me an email or anything today. I'm just kind of putting it out there. Listen this week. There'll be a page up where you can opt into an email list. So that when I start development of this and start kind of building it, which is like ongoing right now, those that want to know can, and those that don't want to know don't have to hear much about it other than, hey, you can go over here and do this if you want to. All right. It's not prepper related other than for, you know, since it's like Patrick, it's no harm telling you it's a stakeholder program that stakeholders may find a good financial benefit. There'll be a lot more seats at the table in this one. It's a lot more mass market, and it's very, very cool, and it's something that we've had the concept in our head for a long time, and we now have the horsepower to take it forward, and just be on the lookout for it. That's all I can say about it. I know some of you are like, what? Tell me. I'm sorry. That's all I'm going to say about that for now. Okay, next, a couple quick announcements. Many of you know who what the name Gary Vaynerchuk means, and Gary's doing some promotion for a new book, and apparently he liked the effect of being on the Survival Podcast last time, and I've just communicated with one of his publicity people and advised them that I'd like to have Gary on under some things along the lines of basically Gary coming on and talking about business from a self-sufficiency standpoint instead of just his book. And I bet they're going to be willing to do that because of how well it went last time. And it's kind of cool to have a guy like Gary potentially coming back on the Survival Podcast. Main reason that I bring that up is because I'm about to read something to you because I just want you guys to know how I look after this community, how I feel about this community. I'm not going to tell you who this was that sent this guest request form in, but I patently told them no because their guest form ran like, we want to do a 60-minute infomercial on our Kickstarter about a new movie that we're doing that's cool, that's the kind of thing that your people would support. When they clearly didn't have any idea who TSP was, and a follow-up email did demonstrate that. They did not know us from Adam. They just are going on a blitz to raise money. I don't let people into this community unless they're givers and not just takers. I don't mind helping people succeed. I like to help people succeed. But I have to feel that the people that I'm helping, especially when I'm asking this community to do anything, are giving back. And that starts out with them first knowing who you are. So this is what I just sent to this gentleman. And he had written me a very long, elaborate email about how wonderful they are and how I was being such a jerk for not having them on. You're wasting keyboard calories. I won't bother to read past. We've never heard of you or your podcast or community, as that is the point. I have a group of 85,000 very loyal listeners. You want access to them. Learn about them first. Get informed as to what TSP is and does. Do that and we can talk. I'm not hostile. I'm simply telling you, you don't get access to my people for something like this from the outside without caring about them enough to learn about them first. I'm currently working on projects like this that are similar for David Crawford of Lights Out and one for Glenn Tate of 299 Days. These individuals are active members of my community. They care about the prepper movement. They engage with my audience and they give back. For me to have you on to pimp your Kickstarter would be like giving my endorsement to you guys on equal footing with David and Glenn, though they have earned it and you have not. It is clear you're on a fundraising blitz. I don't do those types of things. Get to know my people, get to know what we do, and then we can talk,
If that sounds like too much effort, you don't know the community you're approaching. We're one of the biggest and best and most devoted out there, and you're simply not entitled to their support. You might think I'm being a dick, but this is the approach which my folks know that I take that makes them so loyal and committed to supporting causes at all back. I have 85,000 listeners, and being on our show does more for people than being on radio shows with far more listeners. It's all about responsiveness and support. You've got to at least participate before you take anything from these people. And yeah, I am public about it. While I'll not give out your name, I will actually read my response to folks on today's show that I've given you here. I just occasionally want you guys to know that. I know it kind of goes without saying after all the years of working together, but that's how I feel. I do not let people walk in the door and ask to take something from you if they haven't given first. And if they don't know you, they haven't given. So when a guy like Gary comes on that's outside the direct fold, but when he was on my show before at my request, he spent hours just at least acknowledging all the people that said thank you for coming on the show on his Facebook page, he's demonstrated that he cares. And I know Gary's a giver. So that's why I said yes to that and no to these folks. And I do think it's important that you guys know that that's part of my vetting and screening process. And if you're recommending, if you think somebody would be a good guest on this show, really highly recommend that they at least pop in the forum, look around, get a feel. They don't have to post or register. Look at the blog, listen to a couple episodes so they understand the community. Because if I don't feel a guest gets the community and they're just doing it for, you know, pure publicity sake, for the purpose of publicity, they don't get on the show. I'd rather have a listener that doesn't have a blog, that doesn't have anything to sell, that just says, hey, here's what I'm doing in my life, than folks like that. That's why I love Monday shows like the one we're about to embark on right now. And, you know, it's the perfect time to say thank you to all of you folks who have helped make the show successful enough that I can turn people like that away. Whether advertiser, potential partners, whatever, if they don't have the best needs of the community first, I have no reason not to turn them away, because the community is so stable and successful that it's easy to do the right thing. It was hard to do the right thing in the beginning, but I did it, and that's how it becomes easy. There's a little business lesson at the beginning of today's show. Another awesome announcement for you guys. I just announced last week that Brian Black was joining the Expert Council, and that was a huge thing to add to the council. It brings us a whole new level of tactical expertise. But I have another expert council member who I've just gotten an acceptance from that we'll be bringing on this week. And you guys are going to love it. You've heard him before on the show. In fact, I vetted him with you. I had him on the air and I said, do you guys want him as a council member? The response was overwhelmingly yes. Of course, that would be Kerry Davis of Dark Angel Medical is officially joining our expert council. I'm going to put out an announcement about that this week, formally on the blog, welcoming Kerry like I did for Brian. After I do that, in the bottom, it'll list again our expert council, which I won't take time up to read here. But when I put that out, read it and then realize how awesome that group of people is. Those people get access to you because they give first and they ask for nothing and then they get. That's how you build a solid business model. It really is. And that's how you build solid relationships in life. People have been asking a lot lately about prepper groups. Prepper groups. Give. Give before you take. It works. I even use it to explain how we run the Berkey water filter in our home. If you want to take water out of it, you have to put water in the top of it first. And if it works for that, and it works in business, then it'll work in life. Let's go on to your first email today. So this comes from Christopher. And it says, this article articulates the teacup generation almost perfectly. Please take a minute and speed read this. And it's actually so spot on that if my voice will handle it, I think I might read the entire article to you guys. Maybe I'll skip some parts of it and just let you read it, because it would take up a lot of time to read it all. But it's on the Huffington Post, who I don't always agree with, but they do have some great content, and they sure have it here today. And I wonder how many people that read the Huffington Post on a regular basis and think they're sticking it to the man or whatever might actually have their nose bent when they read this article. And it's a perfect venue for this article to be, because while a lot of really switched on folks do take, you know, the good from Huffington Post and leave behind the socialist propaganda, there's a lot of socialist-minded young people who probably just like the person in this article, Lucy, who's just a made-up character. It's called Why Generation Y Yuppies Are Unhappy. says, say hi to Lucy. Lucy is part of Generation Y, the generation born between the late 70s and the mid-90s. She's also part of the yuppie culture that makes up a large portion of Generation Y. I have a term for yuppies in Generation Y, the Generation Y age group. I call them Generation Y protagonists and special yuppies, or gypsies. A gypsy is a unique brand of yuppie, one who thinks they are the main character in a very special story. So Lucy's enjoying her gypsy life, and she's very pleased to be Lucy. Only issue is this one thing. Lucy is kind of unhappy. To get to the bottom of why, we need to define what makes someone happy or unhappy in the first place. It comes down to a simple formula. Happiness equals reality minus expectations. Boy, I like that. I'm off the script now. What? Happiness equals reality minus expectations. I mean, I think every person in this audience should write that down, make a note, put it in your calendar as a reminder or something, and start thinking about the reality of that. Because we have some expectations that may not be met in the future. And understanding how to balance expectations and reality is a big part of how to charge through life and be successful even when everything's falling apart around you. Back on script. It's pretty straightforward. When the reality of someone's life is better than they had expected, they're happy. When the reality turns out to be worse than the expectations, they're unhappy. To provide some context, let's start by bringing Lucy's parents into the equation. Lucy's parents were born in the 50s. They're baby boomers. They were raised by Lucy's grandparents, members of the GI generation, the greatest generation, who grew up during the Great Depression and fought World War II, and were most definitely not gypsies. So you have Lucy, her parents, and her sisters and brothers. You can see the grandparents in the background and the grandpa stick figure saying, pussies, which, hey, it's what it says if you don't like the word, I'm sorry. Lucy's Depression-era grandparents were obsessed with economic security and raised her parents to build practical, secure careers. They wanted her parents' careers to have greener grass than their own, and Lucy's parents were brought up to envision a prosperous, stable career for themselves, something like this. And it's just a little cartoon of big green grass. They were taught that there was nothing stopping them from getting to that lush green lawn in their career, but they need to put in years of hard work to make it happen. And it shows the fact that they had to work for a long period of years with a couple grafts, and it shows hard work over many years, and like to stick dead grass at the bottom of the graft, and it gets up to lush grass many, many years down the line. And the next graph shows that baby boomers had expectations that were good, but the reality was better, and I'll skip some of it. But basically what it's saying is there was a huge economic boom during this time. So the gypsies, I'm back in the article, felt tremendously hopeful about their careers because they saw their parents' success but not their parents' work. Got it? To the point where their parents' goals of a green lawn and secure prosperity didn't do it for them. A gypsy lawn is worthy of flowers. This leads to our first fact about gypsies. They're wildly ambitious. And there's a little cartoon character saying, suppose I could be president, but it's politics. Really? The truest calling of my heart? No, no. That would be settling. Settling. And then it goes on to say that people in the past wanted a secure career, and there's a graph showing the desire for a secure career going down and the desire for a fulfilling career going up. Let me read some more, and I'm skipping ahead, but there's something else happening too. While career goals of Gen Y as a whole have become much more particular and ambitious, Lucy has been given a second message throughout her childhood as well. And it's in like rainbow colors and script and prettiness. You're special. This would probably be a good time to bring out a second fact about gypsies. Gypsies are delusional. Sure, Lucy has been taught everyone will go get themselves some fulfilling career, but I am unusually wonderful, and as such, my career path will stand out amongst the crowd. So on top of the generation of whole having a bold goal of a flowery career lawn, each individual gypsy thinks that he or she is destined for something even better, a shiny unicorn on top of a flowery lawn. And there's a graph of like five other gypsies' little lawns, big, deep lawns with flowers, and then there's Lucy's lawn that has a rainbow puking a rainbow out of its mouth at the top of her lawn that's higher than everybody else's lawn. So why is this delusional? Because that is what all gypsies think, which defies the definition of special. Special, adjective, better, greater, or otherwise different from what is usual. According to this definition, most people are not special. Otherwise, special wouldn't mean anything. Even right now, the gypsies reading this are thinking, good point, but I actually am one of the few special ones. And this is the problem. A second gypsy delusion comes into play once the gypsy enters the job market. While Lucy's parents' expectations was that many years of hard work would eventually lead to a great career, Lucy considers a great career an obvious given for someone as exceptional as she, and for her, it's just a matter of time and choosing which way to go. Her pre-workforce expectations look like this, and it's like just like 1 or 2 years, and then her lawn levels out, and it gets richer and lusher, and it just goes on a straight line, but the puking rainbow unicorn just gets bigger and bigger and bigger. So I don't want to read the whole article, but I do want to tell you what happens next in the story. It goes on to a place where people, the Generation Y, have this expectation it's really, really high, but they're all on the same level down with dead, dying grass, which in the beginning is where they belong. And as long as they work, they can get up there. But what makes it even worse is people on Twitter and Facebook only talk about the good things in their careers and their lives. So the gypsy thinks that her, you know, unicorn giant field is the perfect place to be, and she's down in the dead grass, and it looks like all her friends don't have a unicorn yet, but they have a big lush lawn and lots of pretty flowers, and they're on the way to a unicorn. But the truth is, it's all a lie. It's all people perpetrating a fraud, saying things are better than they really are. And the few successful people that are busting their ass that really do have that are seen by the gypsy as fellow gypsies, and they don't see the work that they're doing. And there's one line in here that I really liked. I didn't think I was going to like it when I first read it, because I know I would have answered it with, yes, I'm special. But I like the way it goes through. Here it is. Paul Harvey, a University of New Hampshire professor and gypsy expert, has researched this, finding that Generation Y has unrealistic expectations and a strong resistance toward accepting negative feedback. And an inflated view of oneself. He says a great source of frustration for people with a strong sense of entitlement is unmet expectations. They often feel entitled to a level of respect and rewards that aren't in line with their actual ability and effort levels. And so they might not get the level of respect and reward they're expecting. This is it. Here, listen to this. For those hiring members of Generation Y, Harvey suggests asking the interview question, do you feel that you're generally superior to your coworkers, classmates, etc.? And if so, why? He says if the candidate answers yes to the first part, which, again, I would say yes, but here's the key, struggles with the why, there may be an entitlement issue. This is because entitlement perceptions are often based on an unfounded sense of superiority and deservingness. They've been led to believe, perhaps throughout overzealous self-esteem building exercises in their youth, that they are somehow special, but often lack any real justification for this belief. In other words, if you can't answer that with, because I've done these things, you're full of crap, you just don't know it. But employers do. Anyway, I think it's a great article. I think it breaks down a lot of the problems with the teacup generation, specifically Generation Y and forward. I had somebody call me one time in the Think Line who was part of this generation and basically said, you know, I've got my stuff together. I don't know why you're so hard on us. I'm not hard on you. I'm hard on all the people around you that make your life a living hell. And it's not their fault. Their parents raised them this way. I think those that are the most successful in the business world today that are young did not have it easy as children. They grew up with struggle and strife in their life, and they decided they wanted something more, and they just started knocking people over if that's what it took to get somewhere. Folks, if you are part of Generation Y and you're unhappy and you feel that your expectations have not met, I got news for you. The answer to your current problems are in the past. Look at the way that your grandparents worked. A lot of people say, well, I don't want to be a slave to the machine, a slave to the man. Then build something of your own. But you may have to work somewhere to gain the experience and knowledge necessary to get out and do something on your own. Call that a modern form of apprenticeship. It just occurs to me that I forgot to do our segment today on history, which is kind of cool, maybe doing it in the middle and not the beginning every day. Year 1207 for episode 1207 today. There's something that happened in 1207 for the first time that is very interesting and very telling toward what they might be doing to our retirement programs tomorrow. Listen to this. And it might not make sense until I tell you what a forced loan is. The first evidence of forced loans in Venice, This is a technique become so a staple of public finance in Europe in the 16th century. So there's first evidence that there ever were these things called forced loans in Venice. And I had never heard of a forced loan and specifically what they were talking about in Venice. So I looked it up for you. The Bank of Venice, the forerunner of the modern bank, had its origin in 1171 in a forced loan which had been adopted as a means of relieving the financial necessities of the Republic of Venice. The wealthy citizens were required to contribute a loan, and instead of the delivery of bonds, the citizens as certificates of indebtedness to the Republic, to them in amounts in a specie, which were received from them, were placed in their credit on the book of ledger. The Republic paid punctually a 4% interest to the citizens. If you're not following this, I'll make it in Jack English in a second. To the citizens who had been levied upon, but did not repay the principal original amounts extracted from the citizens in transactions among themselves, the citizens fell into a practice of transferring each other's portions of indebtedness of the Republic to them. In other words, portions of their credits with the Republic. This method of transacting business would sound so convenient and superior to handling coin money that the Republic established a Bank of Venice in order that the citizens might generally deposit their specie and obtain, therefore, the bank credit. Okay, what does this mean? You're wealthy in Venice in 1207. The government of Venice just says, you're going to loan us money. I don't really want to loan you money. Oh, you're doing it. And here's how much you're going to loan us. Put it in the bank, and they'll do it for you. So you're forced to make a deposit to the Bank of Venice. The government takes your money and pays you a 4% interest on your money, but never gives you the principal back. Okay? This becomes so popular that people start transferring the credits with the government because they know it's good on the 4%. So, you know, I owe you, I don't know, let's just say 4/1207 Venice dollars, and my interest payment is $4 next month, so I just transfer that credit to you and you get the $4 from the government. And it's as good as money. And you get paid on this for like an annuity, but you don't get your principal back. Hello? 401k retirement plan. What does the government want to do? Eventually, funnel all the 401k retirement dollars into bonds. Okay? Now, unlike this, it's not without a bond, but it's a forced loan. It's forcing you to loan the government money and then not letting you take the principal back and paying you only the interest. That which is old is new again. Is it not? Anyway, if you want to learn more about the year 1207, there'll be a link to the 1207 page on Wikipedia in today's show notes, and I'll include a link to teachmefinance.com where I got this information about how these forced loans work. Anyway, again, hopefully this series is beginning to work and people are beginning to get it because we're finding out some really cool things. There's a bunch of boring stuff in there, but almost every year I'm able to pull something out that ties right into modern times. Next up, I want to say a little bit about the Colorado floods, and I've got an article that was sent to me by Paul, and it says, Colorado residents have been told to evacuate or risk weeks without any support systems of support. Some have chosen to stay. The story includes a prepper who is considering staying. It's a pretty interesting article. I'm also going to note that Brent from Prince Edward Island up in Canada said this is a good case for having a bug-out location, and it certainly is. Let me read a little bit to you. Estes Park, Colorado. Colorado mountain towns cut off for days by massive flooding slowly reopened to reveal cabins toppled, homes ripped from their foundation, and everything covered in a thick layer of muck. Anxious homeowners and business owners hurriedly cleaned and cleared what they could and salvaged. Rescuers looked for a break in the weather Monday to resume airlifting those still stranded. Crews plowed up the front, a foot of mud left standing along Estes Park's main street after the river coursed through the heart of the town last week. I hope I have enough flood insurance, said Amy Haprick, whose friends helped her pull up flooring and clear water and mud from the crawl space at her coffee shop. Her inventory was safely stashed at her home on higher grounds. Emergency officials offered a first glimpse at the scope of the damage. Counties reported some 1,500 homes have been destroyed and about 17,500 damaged, according to an initial estimate released on Sunday by the Colorado Office of Emergency Management. There's a lot going on up there right now, and you won't hear about it the way you did with Hurricane Sandy, because frankly, it's in a place where most people are far more self-sufficient. Another article that you might want to check out about this was written by Kurt Linville, who's been on our show. He's the owner and founder of the website 180 TAC and the 180 TAC stove. And he wrote an article that's on Brink of Freedom. And I'll read a little bit of that article to you here as well. It's going to read you basically the end of the article. If you want all the details, you can go over to Brink of Freedom. I'll have a link in today's show notes and read it. This is from a community member that's dealing with this right now and has been on the show a couple times. The water is still raging. The rains have subsided, but thunderstorms are forecast for the next several days. It could be a long time before access to groceries and other services are restored. This is an unexpected challenge in our area. We're accustomed to blizzards and forest fires, but we have little experience with floods. It just goes to show that people need to be prepared for surprise emergencies. Our family is blessed. We're high and dry. We have plenty of food and water as well as water filters. We have wood heat. We are healthy and strong. We have everything we need to be happy at home for the coming days or weeks until normal access to services will be restored. We still have electric power, but we're prepared to go without that if need be. We have made sure that our neighbors have what they need as well. We are prepared to share food and emergency cook stoves from 180 TAC for sterilizing water and cooking. We are enjoying the benefits for being prepared for the unexpected. Pray for the people of Colorado this week, and the crisis is not over yet. There are many who are not prepared. Hundreds, if not thousands, of people will be forced out of their homes. Emergency crews may be pushed to their limits. The flooding is likely to continue and may even get worse over the next few days. Thousands are without access to grocery stores, gasoline, and even clean drinking water. This may not be the end of the world as we know it, but what a surprise. So, you know, that's an example right there. And this is what's really the case that I think a lot of people don't realize going on in Colorado right now. He's got pictures of roads washed out and things like that. Talks about police scanners going off with bridges coming down and stuff like that. There's a lot of people in Colorado right now sitting in their houses. House is fine. No flood. No mud in their living room. No real mandatory evacuation order other than you may be stuck there. No real danger that the flood will directly affect them. But they're having to leave, or they've already left, because once they realized what was going on, they realized they would be stuck there. If you're a prepper, and you're stuck for a week or two in something like this, what a great place to be stuck. Would you rather be stuck in a shelter or your own home? Frankly, would you rather be stuck in the guest room at your brother's place or your own home? Your brother's place is better than a shelter. It's better than a cardboard box or a bridge or an overpass. Probably, you know, if it's going to be more than a day or two, better than a tent. But not better than your own home. I think we're almost comfortable in our own homes. This is why we should have practical preparedness. So, yes, this is a case for it is a good idea to have a bug out location. A place you could go for a few weeks, hang out, and wait to come back. Not just a place to run away and hide in. But it's also a case for making your home well prepared, because in many disasters, a lot of the people that are inconvenienced, displaced, and put in harm's way are not directly affected by the disaster. They're affected by the disaster's aftermath. And I bet that's the case here, that the majority of people that are truly put out here are not directly hit. They're indirectly cut off. And there couldn't be a stronger case for practical preparedness. So I'll put a link to the article on Brink of Freedom, Josiah Wallingford's website, again, authored by Kurt Linville, and this article from the AP for you in the show notes as well. But this is just another lesson in practical preparedness. Let's move on to something a little bit political, or maybe a lot political. I'm going to play an audio for you right now. And I want to take you back to, you know, right before the last election, when I was telling you, doesn't matter who you vote for, the election results are already determined. Honestly, if I could push a button and pick one or the other, I might pick the guy that's going to lose, but it really wouldn't matter that they're one and the same with different marketing around them. And I heard a million reasons why this was the most important election in the history of the world, and little children would be beaten with socks full of chains and nails and hammers and things like that and batteries if we elected one or the other. And there's such a difference. It's undeniable what the difference is. And with that in mind, please listen to this little bit of audio by then and current Vice President Joe Biden talking about what happens if we elect Mitt Romney, and then turn on the news.
He implies by the speech that he's ready to go to war in Syria and Iran. He wants to move from cooperation to confrontation with Putin's Russia. And these guys say the president's out of touch? Out of touch?
Well, come on. Obama doesn't want to go to war with Iran, just Syria. I mean, it's different. It's no. Romney is out of touch because he's moving into confrontation with Putin and wants to go to war in Syria. And if you listen to the rest of the speech, he goes on to basically imply, if you elect Mitt Romney, we're going to go to war with Syria. Which would, by the other token, well, we're not going to do that. We're going to do it, but it's different this time. It's just another example of they're all full of crap, and this is why you need to take your energy away from national politics and either put it into your own life or put it into local politics if you're going to do politics at all. It's the people at the federal level don't care, and they are all the same. You want me to prove it to you yet again? I didn't look for this. This came to me from a listener. Let's see who sent me this one. It was Richard who sent me this one from the Houston area. And the next thing came to me from Pete. It's on the Daily Caller. Now remember. I told you that all of the crap about Mitt Romney and Bain Capital and Bain being so evil was just nonsense. Not that Bain wasn't evil or anything, but that the large companies fund both candidates, and they don't really care who wins. And the candidates are in the pockets of all these companies. And that Obama didn't hate Bain Capital, and that Bain Capital was actually giving more money to Obama than Romney, even though Romney was evil because of Bain Capital. You can't make this up. Okay, I'm sitting on the Daily Caller. I'm reading an article that came out on the 13th, 3 days ago. I'm thinking of all of you that told me how different this was and why voting for the less of two evils made a difference. And I'm going to read to you the headline. Obama outsources nation's economic management to Bain Consultant. President Barack Obama's new top economic deputy is former management consultant who worked for Governor Mitt Romney's Bain & Company investment firm. The appointment of Jeff Zients as the head of the National Economic Council is likely to annoy some union officials and some liberal groups who are focused on declining working class wages and growing poverty, and it clashes with the populist anti-business incentive used by Obama and his aides on the 2012 campaign trail to paint Romney as uncaring. On the campaign, Obama repeatedly slammed Romney's management consulting business, as one of his TV ads even suggested Romney was responsible for the death of a former employee's spouse who passed away after a battle with cancer. But Zients has stellar credentials as a progressive believer in the ability of government and corporate experts to manage America's economy. You can read the rest of the article if you want to. I'm just going to read that one sentence to you again. Zients has a stellar credential as a progressive believer in the ability of government and corporate experts to manage America's economy. Do you know what you call it when you get the government and the corporations working together to manage your economy? Fascism. Fascism. Again, for those that are new to the term this way, fascism is not putting people in concentration camps. Putting people in concentration camps was what one fascist state did. It's what one fascist state did. But selling people on nationalist supremacy and then coercion between the state and the corporatocracy to manage the people for the good of the state and the corporatocracy is a textbook definition of fascism. And let me tell you, the guy that does this job, no matter whether it's Mitt Romney, who used to employ him, or Barack Obama, who currently employs him, will be a fascist, because that's what the system dictates, because that's what the people who funded the election on both sides saw to before the election occurred. So Romney runs Bain Capital,
and is evil for it, because Bain is a big evil corporation and he's out of touch with you. And Obama told you that so you would vote for him, and now employs a management consultant from Bain Capital to do the types of things that Romney was evil for doing. The words of Paul Wheaton, no, it's just marketing. That's all that it is, folks. And if you keep believing the marketing, you're going to focus on your circles of concern versus your circle of influence. Your circle of influence right now is in your backyard, your neighborhood, the walls of your home, and maybe the county level, and possibly, if you're active enough with the right motivation, the state capital. But I'm going to tell you right now, at the federal level, it's all bullshit, and the decisions have already been made, and all they're doing is painting it. It's just like watching the World Wrestling Federation. Everybody always knows who's going to win, but they're putting a good show on for the people that hold up their sign. Please stop believing the lie and start focusing on where you can actually make a difference. In the words of George Carlin, the late, great, hysterical George Carlin, it's a big effing club and you ain't in it. So you better focus on the group you actually have influence with. And this was one of the cases made to me, by the way, last time, why it was so important. It's not just about law, it's about policy with the FDA and the EPA, et cetera, et cetera. And that's my point. Under Bill Clinton, we had Monsanto and Conagra running the Department of Agriculture. Under Bush, the same. Under Obama, the same. Top Monsanto executives are running the Department of Agriculture right now. Under Clinton, we had people from Bayer and Pfizer and Merck running the FDA. Under Bush, yeah, same thing. Under Obama, yes, yeah, same thing. Tell me where it's different, folks. And you can't. Don't try. Don't waste your energy. Build your life, because these people are not listening to you. And they're listening to you no more than Hulk Hogan was when he used to point his arm out and put his hand up to his ear. They like to hear you cheer, and they like to hear you boo the opponent, but they really don't care what the words are that you're speaking. Let's move on to something a little different, because I think I've beaten this horse enough today. And if I haven't gotten through to you today, it's not that I never will, it's just you're not ready yet. How about something that we've done right, something that that maybe future generations will look back on and wonder how a group of people so screwed up were able to pull off. When I was in school, I remember hearing about Voyager, the spacecraft, that was still taking pictures of planets at that time, and how after it took pictures of its last planet, it would make an orbit and slingshot itself to head out of our solar system. It would be many, many years before it actually left what's considered our solar system. And then it would be, you know, lifetimes before it would ever reach another star system. But that while we were alive, unless something broke, we would see the day that mankind had sent something that he had made out of our solar system. That's occurring now. It's pretty cool. NASA's Voyager spacecraft to exit the solar system on Yahoo News. Never before has a human-built spacecraft traveled so far. NASA's Voyager 1 probe has left the solar system, is wandering the galaxy, U.S. scientists said. The spacecraft, which looks like a combination of satellite dish and an old television set with rabbit ears, was launched in 1977 on a mission to explore planets in our solar system. Against all odds, Voyager kept moving and is now about 12 billion miles from our sun in a cold, dark part of space that's between the stars, said Ed Stone, Voyager project scientist. We are indeed in interstellar space for the first time, said Stone, who is based at the California Institute of Technology in Pasadena. Quote, we got there. This is something we all hoped when we started this 40 years ago, Stone said. Quote, none of us knew anything could last this long as the two Voyager spacecraft. The twin spacecraft, Voyager 1 and Voyager 2, were sent off 36 years ago on a primary mission to explore Jupiter and Saturn. They discovered new details about the nature of Saturn's rings and found volcanoes on Jupiter's moon Io. Voyager 2 traveled to Uranus and Neptune before the duo's mission was extended to explore the outer limits of the sun's influence. The precise position of Voyager has been fiercely debated in the past year because scientists have not known exactly what it would look like when the spacecraft crossed the boundary of the solar system, and the tool on board that was meant to detect the change broke long ago. However, U.S. Space Agency scientists now agree Voyager is officially outside the protective bubble known as the heliosphere that extends beyond all planets in our solar system. Their findings, which describe the conditions that show Voyager actually left the solar system in August 2012, are published in the U.S. Journal of Science. NASA said Voyager 1, quote, is in the transitional region immediately outside of the solar bubble, where some effects from our sun are still evident. Voyager 1, with Voyager 2 a few years behind from its travels, sent back data to scientists on Earth on August 25th last year, showing an abrupt drop in energetic charged particles or cosmic rays that are pushed inside the heliosphere. Scientists expected the direction of magnetic field in space would reverse at the barrier known as the helipause. The Voyager 1 magnetometer did not show this change, leading scientists to be extra cautious about declaring whether or not the spacecraft had left the solar system, but they now believe it has. If you want to read the rest of this, you can. But I do think in the future, there will be people in future generations that will wonder how people who made so many grievous errors and fought so many worthless battles with each other and did so much destructive were able to come together and do something so monumentous. And it makes me wonder if we were putting more effort into figuring out what we could do when it comes to doing great things like this, where we would be today versus where we are today. But it's still kind of an uplifting thing to think about the fact that something made by human hands has departed, not just from our atmosphere, not just from the influence of our planet, not just from the orbital plane of our solar system, but out into the vastness of interstellar space. As someone with my age group who grew up remembering these missions, it's a pretty awesome thing indeed to think about. Something totally different and something that has a lot to do with survival and possibly the survival of your children in the future, and something inside your circle of influence, because you control what you eat. And parents, whether you believe it or not, you do control what your children eat. And if they're eating garbage and you take away the garbage, they will eat better food. It's okay if they're hungry for a day or two, and it's a hell of a lot better that they be hungry for a day or two than they develop an illness that's now present in 1 in 10 children that used to be the sole illness of alcoholics. Fatty liver disease, more prevalent in children, from the Wall Street Journal. More than 1 in 10 children in the U.S., or more than 7 million, are thought to have a disease, according to recent studies. The condition in which the normally rust-colored organ becomes bloated and discolored by yellowish fat cells has become so common in drinkers that it has been dubbed non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. The disease's prevalence is alarming doctors who worry about its progression to non-alcoholic steatohepatitis, or NASH, where the fatty liver becomes inflamed and cells are damaged. That leads us to end-stage cirrhosis, where the liver forms a scar tissue and ultimately stops working. The condition's rise is tied to the obesity epidemic. About 40% of obese children have it, but it isn't caused solely by being overweight. The disease appears to be growing among normal weight children, too, experts say. And even though obesity rates are starting to level off, the prevalence of fatty liver disease continues to rise, they say. It has no symptoms, which means a person could have it for decades without knowing it. Quote, this disease is very silent, end quote, said Naeem Akhouri, director of pediatric prevention, cardiology, and metabolic clinic in Cleveland, in the Cleveland Clinic. Because the fatty liver disease has been recognized only fairly recently in children, it's unclear how the disease progresses into adulthood. Roughly 10% of people with fatty liver disease will develop NASH, and another 15 to 20% of those will get cirrhosis, which again destroys your liver completely. While the early stages of fatty liver disease and NASH are reversible, cirrhosis is not. So by the time it goes there, it's permanent. Anyway, you can read the rest of the article if you want to. I'm going to put it in today's show notes. It's very, very long. But the culprit ends up being fructose, too much sugar. And they actually say that it's fructose, like what you find in fruit. But almost moving into a church lady impression from the 1990s and 80s of Saturday Night Live. Isn't that special? Where have we heard fructose before? Could it be corn syrup? Exactly. It's exactly what it is that's causing this. If the cause is too much sugar, specifically fructose, and we've taken corn in the form of fructose syrup and put it in all our foods going back to the 1970s, and we have now children both obese and thin developing a disease that was currently thought of as the realm exclusively of alcoholics, do you have to be a genius to figure this out, folks? You don't. Folks, please, control the sugar intake of your children. Don't let them eat too many carbohydrates, but at the least, get the fructose corn syrup out of your children's diet. And this is just one way that it's destroying our health. And as I said, when you have the corporatocracy setting policy with key appointments like Pfizer and Merck in running the Food and Drug Administration, food and drug. Got it? Food and drug. Why are they the same group? Why isn't there a group that does food and a group that does drug? Because they're tied together. Do you know what Pfizer and Merck think about this? Oh, goody. Another thing to make a pill for. Okay, soon they'll be on TV. Ask your doctor if your child could have, you know, fatty liver disorder or NASH. 1 in 10 children has NASH and doesn't know it. Now there is super liver pill, right? Ask your doctor if your child needs this. What better thing to do if you're a drug company than get a person on a lifetime medication before they're even an adult? The more things change, the less they stay the same. I'm sorry, I'm a little bit off today, guys. In fact, with my voice and as long as we've gone today, here's what I'm going to do. I get an email from a guy that I always thought he was kind of cool, but I never really paid attention to what he was doing very much. Anyway, his name is Chuck Smith of Smith Fix. He's a definite libertarian, and he put out a video on 9/12/13 called "We Are Not Your Enemy for the Rest of the World." I was very impressed with it. You may not agree with everything you hear, but I think you'll agree with 100% of the spirit of it. If you're a peaceful human being that wants peace for the rest of the world, and knows there are certain things that our government it doesn't even involve with. I'll put it to you this way. Before we start telling other people how to run their countries, maybe we should figure out how to run our own, at least at the government level. Maybe as long as the people that make the drugs run the drug administration, maybe as long as the people that poison the food supply run the food organizations, maybe as long as the people that destroy the currency run the organizations that control the currency, maybe until we fix that, we should leave other people to solve their own problems, especially when they're problems that we largely created ourselves. So with that, here's Chuck Smith. Audio from his video, I did get permission from him to put this on the show, and I'll come back with some final thoughts and we'll wrap up for the day.
This is an open letter to the world from an American. We, the American people, are not your enemy. Please give me a few minutes of your time, human being to human being, for we're all in peril. I recognize that to many, if not most of the world, the United States of America is seen as a tyrannical and moralless nation. How can I argue against that? I cannot, for it is unfortunately the truth. Those who have control of this once great nation have turned a beautiful and bountiful republic, the very envy of the world for its liberty of the individual and government constrained to its proper limited role in the lives of its people, into an oppressive emerging police state and the greatest threat to peace the world has ever seen. For this, we the American people are responsible and will doubtless soon pay dearly, just as every people of a republic turned empire and tyranny has. Our astonishing comforts born of individual liberty, responsibility, and morality has given way to apathy, ignorance, and a sense of entitlement. Encouraged by socially destructive social programs, corrupt schools, media, and entertainment industries, we Americans, by vast majority, have become lazy, selfish, obese, and ignorant. We're a war-weary people with an economy on the verge of collapse. The breadlines of the past are being hidden by direct payments from a government desperate to keep the illusion of normalcy, but very much aware that the course has nearly run out. History teaches that when governments cause the collapse of a nation's economy through corruption and greed, they use war as a shield and a distraction. And those who see through this illusion are labeled unpatriotic, subversive, or even as today, potential terrorists. To any American who would say such of me, I say, show me where I'm wrong. Evil is evil, regardless of how you feel about it. And truth, regardless of what the government schools teach, is not malleable based on your emotions. We Americans have fallen prey to a corrupt political elite which will go to any extreme to maintain the status quo of a false two-party paradigm, while in fact the two parties are operating in lockstep to enrich themselves and subjugate the American people through lies, fear, and intimidation. We've also fallen to a financial elite with no loyalty to anything but wealth. As has happened in the past to other nations, the American Republic has been transformed into a fascistic state. No longer are laws written to protect the individual. Now they are written by the corporations and put into law to further bleed the wealth and labors from the American people. At the heart of it is the parasitic central banking system put in place and protected by traitors to the people. One of our greatest forefathers warned us of this. Listen carefully to his words. They may apply to your nation as well. I believe that banking institutions are more dangerous to our liberties than standing armies. If the American people ever allow private banks to control the issue of their currency, first by inflation, then by deflation, the banks and the corporations that will grow up around the banks will deprive the people of all property until their children wake up homeless on the continent their fathers conquered. Thomas Jefferson. In truth, this is now what America goes to war for. Bankers, corporation, and the corrupt politicians they have purchased. These same who have reduced Americans to renters with the illusion of ownership of their homes and created our own police state just waiting to be unleashed upon us, perhaps deservedly so. We, the American people, have been lied into wars of aggression with and against you. To support this corrupt monetary system and corporations, which have indeed grown up around it, just as we were warned. It is the propagation and continuation of this corrupt system that has led to these wars of aggression by America and the Western Central Bank nations, and led to the death and disfigurement of your brothers and sisters and mine. For your murdered women and children, I have no parallel. only grief and guilt. We, the American people, are not your enemy. The corrupt politicians, bankers, and corporations are, and they are our enemy as well. These mutual enemies of ours are not just preparing for acts of aggression against you. They're also pre-positioning war materials all across America to do war on the American people as well. The surveillance state that is now the United States is a wonder of modern technological power. Literally trillions of dollars have been spent to be able to categorize those who have or may resist. Laws such as the National Defense Authorization Act have been passed to give the United States government the legal authority to disappear those of us they deem inconvenient. While at the same time, the United States government points the fingers at other regimes who have done the same, but where it is still technically against the law. Our tyrants, lawyers most of them, have made it legal here, and in their minds, that makes it a distinction. Just as the gassing of 26 children and 50 adults at the Waco, Texas massacre prior to incinerating them was justified, but only if it is American law enforcement doing it. Under the fear tactic of terrorism, repeated false flag attacks have been perpetrated against us, the American people, and thousands of innocents killed. I know that to date, these lies and false flags have cost you much, much more. Again, all I can say is I grieve and feel guilt. Millions have been killed in our name, nations brought to anarchy and ruin to give the feast to the carrion eaters who thrive on death and destruction, the bankers who finance and profit from both sides of the conflicts, and then again profit from the cost of the rebuilding as well. The international commodities corporations who move in right behind the killers, loot the vanquished for their resources of the nation, but sell to the highest bidder on the world market with no loyalty to the country who supplied the wealth, blood, and killers to enable their plunder. Such blood commodities should be banned, as blood diamonds are. The military-industrial complex has grown to such leviathan proportions that its presence is ubiquitous everywhere in America. And soon we Americans will share in the wages of evil and sin that we allowed to be brought to you. As long as these war criminals and perpetrators of crimes against humanity are alive, in positions of power, or have any influence, there is no hope for peace in the world. As long as these war criminals and perpetrators of crimes against humanity are alive, in positions of power, or have any influence, mankind itself is in danger of extinction. If we are fated to eventually give our lives in the defense of life, liberty, family, or honor, let us be wise in how we spend our blood. Let us know that we are not the enemy of each other. We have a mutual enemy who fears our awakening from the illusion, and that the division by race, religion, national origin, these are tools of the deceivers and the carrion eaters. We, the American people, are not your enemy. My name is Chuck Smith from Texas, USA, and I say to you, we are not your enemies. Let us work together to eliminate those who truly are. Strength and honor be of service. talk to people, save lives, peace. May your God or your gods go with you.
Well, if it's possible to be both proud and ashamed at the same time, that's pretty much the doorway into it, to listen to someone speak that well in ways to define what is the greatest things about us as a people and the worst things about the nation that has sprung up around us while the illusion of the nation we once were is kept intact through a marketing campaign. And a belief that it's only the other guy that's the bad guy. I challenge you today to watch this video. It's not just the guy speaking. There's a lot of pictures and slideshow behind it that drive home the points better than they could have been taken on today's show. And of course, what has Chuck speaking so passionately right now is our seeming desire to intervene militarily in Syria, a conflict which I believe we are largely responsible for because our old puppet is no longer fully obeying the hand inserted into his ass. And it's time for a new puppet because, gee, that worked out so well in Egypt. And as I listen to this, I think about the absurdity of a recent conservative talk show host I heard while I was in my truck picking some stuff up here last week about this very issue. And he said, war weary is something that you heard Chuck say. And that word's being tossed around a lot right now among people that say we don't need another war, that we're a war weary people. And the host said, it's irrelevant. It's irrelevant that we're war weary, that we're the only nation strong enough to do something, so it's incumbent upon us to do it. And he pointed out the two past conflicts. He said, don't you think our forefathers, our ancestors, our grandparents, don't you think they were war weary after World War II when we had to stand up and do something in Korea? And after that conflict, don't you think we were war weary when we were called upon to do something in Vietnam? You have to be absolutely smoking crack to make those your examples of why we should do something. Korea, a conflict that could have been ended in weeks and ended up with the same result if we didn't become warmongers and push the North Koreans all the way to the Yellow River and drive China into the war. The war could have never been a war. It would have been a quick and done deal with a lot less harm done to the long-term outlook for the nation of Korea. But no, we turned it into a full-on scale war instead of just going in, helping the ally, pushing back beyond the parallel, and saying, now we're going back to the way we agreed to. Don't do that again, or we're going to blow the crap out of you. No. We decide to make that a full-on conflict. And then he brings up Vietnam, a nation that we occupied for over a decade, that 50,000 plus Americans gave their lives for, that hundreds of thousands came home scarred both externally and internally for the rest of their lives for, and were spit on by their own people. He brings up those two as examples of why you don't not intervene just because you're war weary. It's the mindset of the people marketing to you today. Now you might think to yourself, Jack just told us earlier that those people in those big white houses, it's white houses, not White House, because the Capitol's white, don't listen to us. So what are we to do? Speak anyway. Tell them anyway. Don't do this. They'll do what they want anyway. But the one thing we can do that's in our circle of influence, the one thing that can stave off the police state, no one shut up and more people talk. Educate the entire mass of the people to the reality, especially those in law enforcement and military service. People say, Jack, with all of the things that are being done to oppress us today, using force, how can you turn around and give a discount to military and law enforcement? Because they're listening to us. We need them. We need them. We need them the way that the people of Germany needed them, and they failed the people of Germany because the people of Germany were quiet as long as it was somebody else with a problem. As long as it was somebody that looked different or sounded different or talked different or lived somewhere else, people kept their mouth shut because, hey, things are getting better. We cannot have that in this country. People often say, Jack, aren't you afraid they're going to round us up and take us to FEMA camps? No. And the reason I'm not isn't because I don't think that they'll do oppressive things. I still have enough faith in the people of this country that we won't shut up. We'll keep talking, we'll keep telling people, and if you try to use the force apparatus against the people, and the people you're counting on to exert said force all go, no, I don't think we'll be doing that today, then the tyrants fall quickly in what's known as a bloodless coup. But not the kind of coup we think of in a banana republic. They fall because once they try to enact their plan, the few doubters see it for what it is. And their force lies down on the job. It is only by informing all of what's coming that when it comes, the people that have the power to act will recognize it for what it is. The members of the SS and the Gestapo, not the top guys, but the foot soldier of those organizations, didn't commit the atrocities that they did because they thought it was a good idea. They committed the atrocities that they did because they were slowly weaned into it by doing one more sacrifice, one more thing. I really don't feel, but I know this is the right thing to do. This doesn't seem, and eventually they were so ingrained in the system, they couldn't rebel from the system because they feared the very thing that they were doing to others would be done to them. And I know of personal stories where many still did the right thing. Many said, run. I have a story from my father-in-law of just that. I'm going to pretend to be sick. You run away. Get out of here. Well, we don't need one or two doing that as this police state rises. We need thousands, tens of thousands of people that they're counting on to exert that force to go, I'm sorry, maybe you never heard of Oath Keepers. And that's what it's going to take. It's going to take them feeling that it's their time to totally overwhelm the American people, en masse to resist, and for them to say, go put it down, and for the forces to stand up and say, I don't think we'll be doing that today. Can it happen? Yes. Will it happen? Only if we continue to tell people what's going to happen in large enough numbers that when it happens, it's recognized instead of accepted. Is it possible? Yes. Is it probable? I don't know. Will I keep fighting for it? You bet your ass. And Mr. Smith, I salute you for your video. I know from looking at past things that we do not 100% agree on every individual detail, but I know that we agree in spirit that the purpose of this republic is to be a shining light of strength and honor and peace. And we have failed in those respects for a long time, but specifically in recent history. The spirit still exists in the people of this nation. And I have faith that it's awakening in a rebirth right now. And I'm proud that I and this community are part of that. And with that, this has been Jack Spirko with another edition of the Survival Podcast, helping you figure out how to live that better life if times get tough, or even if they don't. Seeing our food these days, you know it's on our TVs. Sometimes we forget we are what we eat. I don't know the answer. It's like there's nothing I can do. It's the price we pay, I guess, when we follow all the rules. There's a better way to do this. Let me show you.
a better way. Nobody up there cares, they're living for today. Revolution is you.